We're talking about animal products that may or may not be kosher, even if they're from kosher animals. So let's talk about Chol of Yisrael.
Oh boy!
Jonathan's excited. Who here is Makbid on Chol of Yisrael? Raise your hand if you're Makbid. He's not Makbid.
Yeah, this year.
Who is the OU Heksher? I don't have Makbid.
Other than during like Kind of the Zamani Pesach, I think he
did. It's a Chol of Yisrael story. I was at Lubavitch camp. And the counselor saw me eating a Twix bar, which normal Jews would say are kosher. He comes up to me, takes my Twix bar away, and gives me a dollar. And then throws the Twix bar in the ground.
Okay, no, Lubavitchers are like ultra machmir on the Indian of Chol of Yisrael. I'll pick Kabbalah, they're very into Chol of Yisrael.
I was here, that's why my brother wants to move to Israel, because they have Chol of Yisrael.
Chol of Yisrael, that's why? Okay, interesting. Maise Shehoya Kachoya, I'll tell you a Maise Shehoya. When I learned in Yeshivat Har Etzion, so sometimes they have groups of soldiers that come to the yeshiva just stam to like, I don't know, they take them to various different places. I don't know what exactly they do there. They tour, they hear a lecture. Yeah, this is what like a yeshiva looks like. So in any event, one day I'm standing next to their coffee machine, and this soldier comes over. He's not wearing a kippah at all, chlal not. Okay, comes over to the kippah. So it comes over to the coffee machine. So he says to me, "Is the stuff in the machine kosher?" I said, "Yeah, you know," thinking like, "Hey, this is a yeshiva, you know, yeah, it's kosher." So he says to me, "Is the chalav Yisrael?" Yeah, it's chalav Yisrael. Oh, okay. So now I combine them. Here's a guy. He's not even wearing a kippah, and he's a makbid of chalav Yisrael. So I think it's a, you know, in Eretz Yisrael people are much more likely to be Makbid, and especially Sfardim, and especially Chassidim as well. This guy was no Chassid, but he probably was Sfardi. Yeah.
I just want to clarify something technical. Everybody is required to keep Chol of Yisrael. The debate about whether is whether or not one fulfills that requirement through the heter of Rav Moshe Feinstein.
Okay, Jonathan, come up and give the shiur. You know, very good. Let's discuss the issue. Let's understand why someone would or would not be careful about the union of Chol of Yisrael and where it comes from. Okay? So it starts as follows. The sugya starts as follows. There's a Mishnah in Maseches Avodah Zarah, Lamed Hei Amud Beis. And the Mishnah says, Chol of Nochri, which is the opposite of Chol of Yisrael.
Chol of Akum.
Is also midrabbanan. So there you have it. It's pretty straightforward. Okay? Chalav, milk produced, milked by a non-Jew, is also midrabbanan. What's the reason for the isser midrabbanan? It's based on a chashash, a concern that perhaps they might mix in milk from non-kosher animals. As we've discussed, hayotze min ha-tahor, tahor, hayotze min ha-tamei, tamei. So milk from a kosher animal is kosher. Milk from a non-kosher animal is non-kosher. So you never know what you're getting. Who knows? You order a pint of milk, and maybe you're getting a little bit of camel milk mixed in there or something. So therefore, the Chachamim came along and made gzeira d'rabbanan on all milk that is produced by non-Jews. So now, those of us who grew up not being makbid for Chol of Yisrael are on the defensive over here. How do we get away with not being? It's a Mishnah Mifureshes. Mishnah Mifureshes, yes?
I have a question. Like we said, like, wow. The reason is because a non-Jew might do something bad.
Yeah.
Like, as like yesterday we discussed, the meat guy in L.A., he's a Jew,
yeah.
And he was serving the non-kosher meat, so how can we trust a Jew?
Okay.
Can't trust anyone.
I'm not going to tell you. If you can't trust anyone, so then you have to make all your own food. Okay.
So just like you get away with the Jew, you let the guy.
No, so we don't assume that. We don't assume that. Okay, a Jew really, Alpi Halacha, a Jew has ne'emanus binyan kashas. How is it that you? One sec. How is it that you can come to my house and eat the food? You never know what happened. You never know. I have ne'emanus because I'm a frum Jew. Okay, a person who does not believe in the system cannot be trusted with regard to the system, because as far as he's concerned, what's the real difference? So as long as you don't know, ignorance is bliss. as far as he's concerned. Now, the emes is, we can't make, not every generalization, of course, this in itself is a generalization. Generalizations are not true with regard to every single individual. I know the following case. You know these camps, they all have these like ice cream stores in the towns nearby, which basically, you know, are not necessarily totally kosher, but the rabbi goes in there and certifies that certain things are kosher, and the people go and buy ice cream there. That's what happens. So I know firsthand of the following story, whereby one of these camps, probably some you went to, so the in the Hicktown nearby where they had this store, so the rabbi went in there and he checked, and you know, some of the ice cream, a lot of the ice cream flavors were kosher, and he gave his certification to certain specific products, whatever came in a package with a hechsher, even though it's not sold in a package. So he'd come in periodically and check, and he gave a hechsher to certain things, certain flavors and certain toppings. Now there was one topping, which basically the topping was crushed up Oreo cookies. Now Oreo cookies are kosher, but it was crushed up in a factory that didn't have a hechsher, so the topping came without a hechsher. So it was not on the rabbi's list of approved toppings. So the kids would come to the ice cream store, and they would be big chachamim. They'd say, come on, it's just crushed up Oreos, and they'd order the topping. And the goyish proprietor of the ice cream store was a frum lady, Christian, and she would not sell it to them. It's not on your list of approved toppings. I'm not selling you this topping.
That's crazy. Nice.
That's wild.
More ladies,
yeah. Why? So every rule has its, obviously, every rule has its exceptions. But both in Klali, a person who's from has ne'amonus, a person who's not from has no ne'amonus. Okay, in contemporary times, we see that a person who has a vested financial interest, so we try to ensure that they that we have something objective. Individual to ensure the kashas. Okay, but we're getting a little bit far afield. Both in Klali, a Jew has ne'amonus. If a Jew milks the cow and gives it to you, you can rely on it. If a non-Jew milks the cow and gives it to you, so even if you know that they're a very reliable non-Jew, it doesn't matter. The Chacham made exer d'rabbanan, milk produced by a non-Jew, no good. Now, the Chachamim came along and said, however, when they made this gzera, that if the non-Jew milks the cow, but a Jew is supervising, that's okay. Now, what's pshat? This is the big question. How do we understand the fact that if a Jew is supervising, that if the Jew is watching what happens, that this is permissible? Is it because, is it simply not called chol avakum anymore? Definition of chol, Chacham came along and made it dindra bon. Chol of Yisrael is kosher, chol of Akum is not kosher. The definition of chol of Yisrael is milk that's milked by a Jew, or that a Jew watches when it's milked. Okay, but anything which is chol of Akum is treif across the board. That's exer d'rabban. That's one way to understand. Another way to understand could be that the Chachamim just answered any time when it's feasible that something treif was mixed in. If it's not feasible that something treif was mixed in, so then they never made the gzera. Or maybe it's something in between. It could be that the gzera applies even when it's not so feasible. But the gzera doesn't apply if there's a reason why the guy would be afraid to mix it in. Right? So let's say the guy only has cows. He doesn't have anything else. So it's not shaykh, he's mixing something else in. Okay, but there's no one watching him. There's no one supervising. So he's not afraid. So maybe there the gzera does apply. But if he's being supervised by anyone, Jew or non-Jew, then he's afraid. He has what to lose. Maybe in that case the gzera didn't apply. So this is these different understandings of the sugya, Maseches Avodah Zarah, serve as the basis of the differing opinions with regard to the inyan of Chol of Yisrael. Okay? If you take a stringent approach, so you might say the definition of Chol of Yisrael is milk that is milked by a Jew or watched by a Jew. Anything that's not watched by a Jew is called Chol of Akum, Gzeres D'Rabbanan, that's it. So then you have to be machmir for Chol of Yisrael. Rav Moshe Feinstein famously has a series of tshuvas in Igros Moshe Chel Galef, where Yordei Chel Galef, where he writes that although it's a reasonable chumrah to be machmir for Chol of Yisrael across the board, he thinks it's reasonable to assume that in any situation where there is an outside force which causes the producer of the milk to be scared to mix in other products, like for example in America, the FDA, so then the gzeira against Chalav Akum does not apply. It goes further. He says, Yisrael, when the Mishnah says that if a Jew is watching, it's okay. What does that mean, watching? Lav Zafka, watching. He actually sees it. It's acceptable as long as we know for a fact that there's nothing mixed in. Bekitzer, he says that it's absolutely reasonable to assume that if there's real supervision on the part of government agencies and there are consequences for those who go ahead and mix in non-dairy, you know, cow milk into their cow milk, so then he thinks it's a reasonable kula. That's the minhag ha'olam where we come from, is to rely on this kula of Rav Moshe Feinstein. You should understand that there are those who are machmir. It should go without saying that Rav Moshe's kula only applies when there is real supervision on the part of the FDA. If you're going to go to some, like, you know, roadside stand and a guy actually milks a cow and you're not watching and gives you a cup of milk straight from the cow or something, or you go to some other country where they don't have tight government regulations, so then l'chol adeus, you have to be machmer l'chol of Yisrael. That's not a chumrah anymore. At that point, that's maker adin, according to all opinions. L'chol of Yisrael would be a necessity. Okay, in the contemporary reality in America, so there are many, many people who rely on the kula of Moshe Feinstein. It's acceptable. Now, those who are machmer, it's not a crazy chumrah to be machmer on milk that's actually supervised by a Jew in the milking process. Yes?
The only two countries I'm aware of that this kula would apply is the United States and Canada.
Okay, I admit to you, I don't know what goes on in European countries.
Yes. Yeah, places like Poland, you'd have to keep Chalav Yisrael.
Okay, I don't know. I don't know what level of regulation they have. I've never looked into it. But as I said, unless there's tight regulation, what we're saying is that Chalav Yisrael is a requirement. Just a question of what's the definition of Chalav Yisrael. Moshe would say there's room to allow even the regularly FDA supervised milk in America to be considered to be Chalav Yisrael. Yeah.
I was going
to
ask, but you kind of, is there really, like, you don't have to know, like, what other countries this really
applies. I don't know. But, I don't know. Yeah.
I guess I don't know. We're not up to cheese yet.
Okay, so, yeah, there are those, even among the machmirim when it comes to milk, there are poskim who are more makel when it comes to cheese, because apparently the milk of non-kosher animals doesn't really, can't really make it into cheese.
Yeah,
so there's a good side to say that the gzeira was never applied when it comes to cheese. There's also a discussion with regard to what's called avkat chalav nochri. Okay, milk powder. When it's powderized, so there are those who claim that that's no longer called milk and the gzeira d'rabban never applies. So as long as we have no actual chashash, there is non-kosher stuff mixed in, then it's mutter. So there are those who would be more likely to be mekel on avkat chalav nochri rather than on chalav nochri itself. So sometimes you'll see on products in Israel, especially in specific, those which are imported. Okay, those within Israel itself, basically all the milk that's available is Chalav Yisrael. But in imported products, you'll sometimes see that it'll say it's approved by the Rabbanut, but it'll say it contains Chalav Nochri. Or it contains Avkat Chalav Nochri. Yeah.
What I'm saying, like in America now, I just looked up the exact number, but most cheese now is, the whole thing with cheese is there was rennet. And like the concern is that you can take rennet from animal stomachs and that's what you use to grow the cheese. But at least
no, I was not talking about that you don't need supervision on the cheese making process. That you certainly do.
But I'm
talking about the milk that you use for the cheese.
I'm asking because now in the United States, it's over 90% of the rennet that you use to make cheese is by a product called FPC, which uses fungus, which has the same chemical makeup as the rennet that you can extract from animal stomach, but it's much cheaper to use that, mm-hmm. and then you use that to grow cheese. So under 10% of cheese is made by rennet that's taken from mammals and out of that amount of rennet, some of that rennet is also taken from cows. So you have a very minuscule amount of rennet used, for sure way under row of rennet used that to make the cheese. So I don't understand why
you're asking why you need a hashgacha on cheese, b'zmanenu.
Yeah, if the hook, if the rennet, if the rennet that you used is, if the rennet that you use is also supervised by the FDA, and the milk is supervised by the FDA, I don't understand why.
The FDA supervises it, ensures that you don't use animal rennet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I heard that.
So how is it that they have X percent that is animal rennet?
What?
What do you mean? How could they? You said that it's 10% of the cheese
because
that's made
is. There's a symbol on it. I'm saying.
Ah, they mark off which rennet is used on the cheeses? Yeah. Is that right?
Yeah. That's what I don't understand. Like, all the cheeses that you'll read it on the back of cheeses in America, the cheeses that use these, which is pretty much every cheese you'll pick up, will say that, like, it's suitable for vegetarians. Because they don't use animal, there's no animal rennet used.
Okay, we'll have to look into that. I have to look into this further. I don't know.
Like, I don't use the rennet because, like, takeaway business from like people that actually extract their own and stuff like that. So like their habit is like or something like that.
I don't know.
It's crazy thing.
Okay.
No, the problem in Israel, the problem is just you can jealous.
Does it matter if the Jew is not religious at all? Like,
yeah, it matters. Yeah, it matters.
You need a mashgiach to me. It matters. If the Jew is not religious, you need a mashgiach to me.
You mean if it's milked by Jews or as a supervisor?
If
what's
the non-Jew where it would be a problem? What if it's just a Jew that's not religious?
The guy in LA was
yes, Jews.
Okay.
Where's the non-religious Jew? Is the Jew milking the cow or is the non-religious Jew?
Okay, fair question.
The non-Jew is, the Jewish guy is milking the cow, but he, it's the same as the non-Jew that you're scared he may mix the things.
But that's because someone's off.
Also,
okay, I don't think that the gzeira of Chol of Akum applies to Jews who are not religious. On the other hand, they don't have ne'emanus. Okay, we don't rely on them in Yoni Kashrus. One second. So if for other reasons there's no chashash that they're mixing in shave stuff, then it would be reasonable to consume the milk that they produce. We wouldn't assume that there's a gzeira that would apply across the board to them, to their milk, even if there's no chashash. Okay, if there's a chashash based on the circumstances, so then we would have to be machmir. If there's no chash, then we could be megal.
So we assume that since they're non-Jews, they're trying to like make us do averas, so they're like mixing in trade.
I said it could be that it's, you know, done maliciously, or it could be not done maliciously.
So that's why
he has a, you know, he has a responsibility to fill X amount of milk. If he doesn't get that much enough from his cows, he might mix in from his other animals.
The same thing could be for a non-Jew. Or for a Jew.
He could, okay. So again, it'll depend on the facts of the case. Let's say, for example, you have a farmer. He doesn't have non-kosher animals. He has a big herd of cows. He doesn't have anything else. He's a dairy farmer. That's all he does. Okay, so it's not so shaykh that he's going to mix in other things.
Right.
Okay, on the other hand, if you hold that there's a gzeira across the, you know, if there's no government supervision, let's say, or if you hold the government supervision is not good enough, so then, it doesn't matter that there's no chashash, he's not mixing it, according to most poskim. It's called Chalav Nachri and it's Aser. And that's the distinction I'm making. Chalav Akum. Chalav Akum and Chalav Nachri is the same thing. Okay? Yeah.
Sure. And what about, I'm saying there's like cheeses such as cream cheese.
Yeah.
Don't use rennet to make it. It's an acid reaction that you mix with the milk that forms cream cheese. So
I think it's the facility that it's made in.
I understand, but there's no rennet. Even if you're worried about the rennet, even though you just said that there pretty much is very little animal rennet, but even if you're worried about that it could be used.
Okay, I don't know enough about the metzias with regard to the cream cheeses. Bli Neder, we'll try to investigate further. And find out some of the more the metzias. You know, in anything in kashrus, you have to be concerned not only about the ingredients that are being used, but also about the kalim and also about other, you know, parts of the process. So I don't know enough to say, yeah, no problem, you can just buy it without hashgacha. Okay, Belina, then we'll try to look into it. Okay, we'll move on. Let's discuss the issue of gelatin.
Yeah, it was a big problem in Israel for a while.
Yeah, for a long time this was a bit... So, okay, let's discuss gelatin. What is gelatin? So first of all, gelatin has... the types of gelatins that are used has changed quite a bit over the years. Okay, so it's always necessary to understand what we're talking about. When it originally came out, so basically it is a substance that's made from crushed up bones of animals. Okay, and when mixed into mixtures, it gives body and it keeps things together. Okay, so for example, it allows you to make yogurt,
ice cream,
and you know, marshmallows and all kinds of things. Okay, so it allows things to stick together. So the question is, they were using it from bones of non-kosher animals.
Well, also, Also, in the, also like for ice cream, like Rabbanu was saying that because Nishtana Tzura.
Ah, so was so good.
Use it in ice cream, but
so very good. So there were those who made the following arguments, and when I say those, I mean some of the Gedolei HaPoskim, Reb Chaim Moser Grudzinski, for example. He said that if you're using bones which are hard and which are dry, so that's not food at all. It's not a food substance, and therefore it's not shreif. Even if you then mix in that non-food substance, which is from a treif animal source. Since it's not a food substance, even if you mix it into a food, that doesn't make the other food treif, because this is not a food substance. It doesn't have the status of treif food, because it's not food.
So isn't he arguing
the same thing about rennet? One thing at a time. Hold on, let's just focus on this, and we'll discuss rennet a different time. Okay, that was the opinion of the Achiezer Bicheskel Abramsky, if you're familiar with the name. Again, another one of the great Torah figures of the 20th century. So he was Mekel as well. He was making, even if the bones are not so dry. Rav Aaron Cutler was the big machmir. He was not the only machmir, but he was a big machmir on the Indian of gelatin. And basically, he was very forceful about it. And he was of the opinion that it has the status of iser, even though it's true that when it's hard, dry bone, it's not called food. When it then gets mixed into an edible food substance and the whole thing becomes edible, so the iser is the iser resurfaces. It comes back to life. It's choser v'neir. Okay, so that was the argument, oversimplification of all the issues here. But that's the basic argument here of Rav Aaron Cutler. The American conscious organizations, due to the influence of Rav Aaron Cutler, even though there are many great poskim who were mekel, but they basically didn't allow gelatin. Okay, so we all grew up, at least I grew up, I don't know, but I think gelatin, that's like equals, you know, pig or something. That's basically the definition of treif if it has gelatin. Here in Israel, the Mahajan conscious organizations were always machmer on the idea of gelatin. The non-Mahajan organizations accepted the kula of various other poskim, the Achiezer, Rav Chaim Moser, and Rav Yecheskel Abramsky, and they allowed use of gelatin. Now, I should point out, as I mentioned before, that the types of gelatins that are available and that are widely used have changed over the years. So, for example, there was a shift away from the dry bones to bones that are not as dry. That changes. There was a shift away from bones to pig hide. It was being made from pig hide for a while. So that's more severe. That's more likely that the pig hide is considered to be treif as opposed to the bones, the dry bones. At the same time, so the kulas that used to exist don't necessarily exist anymore, number one. Number two, on the other hand, there are a lot of better options for gelatin that have been developed. So they've developed gelatin from fish bones, which are, which solve some of the problems. They developed, kosher gelatin, which is made from the animals of kosher bones. The bones of kosher animals, which have been shechted. So then it's for sure kosher. Then the question is, well, is it considered fleishig? So that's also, it's actually a machlokes among contemporary kashrus organizations in America, if they would consider it to be fleishig or not. Yeah?
If you're a machmir Sephardi, then could you eat ice cream that's made with bones from fish?
Okay. Apipai, look, the whole thing about fish and cheese is made up anyway. Havudullah losef Allah. Okay, don't tell anyone. Okay, we'd have to be so machmir about this. Okay, we'll talk about that at a different time.
Why
Torah Israel? What's that?
Why Torah Israel?
Just heard this. Okay, new chumra, sfarim can't eat ice cream ever. Okay. In any event, that's what's going on. That's a little bit of a rundown of the historical background of the issue of gelatin. Bismanenu, there are what's called kosher gelatins around, which are available and which companies use. And again, different organizations may have slightly different standards of exactly which kosher gelatins they'll use for which products. But that is the that's a little bit of the background just to understand the union of gelatin. Let's discuss another issue which you hear floated around a lot, these terms. Let's just understand what it is we're talking about. And that is the issue of glatt. Oh, glatt. Glatt is a Yiddish word. What does it mean? Who knows?
Super.
Nope. Not correct.
Like
glatt is Yiddish. The Hebrew equivalent is chalak.
Like smooth.
Smooth. Smooth. What does this mean? Okay, as follows. As follows. Very good. So we know that there's such a thing as a trefa. A trefa is an animal that has certain, and there's a whole list of them, certain internal defects which render the animal non-kosher. Okay, generally assumed that these defects would cause the animal to die within a year, but there's a specific list of defects that render the animal a trefa, and that makes it treif. The word treif comes from this. Okay, it comes from treif. Literally, the word treif actually means torn, as in torn by a predator, which would presumably lead to such defects. Yes?
Unlike the remnant that's moved away from animal, it seems that the overwhelming majority is still made from pig skin for gelatin.
Gelatin, maybe.
44% of gelatin.
Wow. Okay, 44. But Josh tells us from his internet research right now that 44% of gelatin bismaninu is made from pig skin. So that's a lot. Pigskin gelatin is a problem, even according to the Achiezer and Rabbi Cheskel Abramsky. Okay, very good. So treifa. Now, by the way, derech agav, if you have milk from a treifa, a cow that's a treifa, so then that would also be treif. If you have eggs from a chicken that's a treifa, so then it's also treif. So how do you ever drink milk? Who knows? Maybe the cow that it came from is a treifa. So we know, right, we have a din of rov. Now, you can rely on rov, even if it's not an absolutely overwhelming majority, even if it's not 99% to 1%. As long as it's a rov, you can rely on the rov, unless you have the chance to check. There's basically, in terms of the basic rules of rov, it goes like this. This is what we call ruba delesa kamon. It goes like this. If we have a mi'ut hamatsui, mi'ut hamatsui means a somewhat common minority, so then you have to check if you are able. So mi'ut hamatsui, according to many poskim, means it's 10% or more. Okay, so let's say that... I'll tell you what. Let's say you shecht a cow. So there are 18 different types of treifa, things that can rent that can make it a treifa. Do you have to check for all those things before you eat the meat? So the answer is al pi halacha. If it's a miuche no matsui, if less than 10%, some posts can hold 7% or 5%. Okay, the lenient opinion says 10%. If it's less than 10% likelihood that it has this treifa, you don't have to bother checking. If it's more than 10%, then you do have to check if you're able to. If you're not able to, you're allowed to be lenient even without checking. Now, when we milk a cow, so it's not considered to be shaykh to check. What are you going to do? MRI, every time you milk a cow, you're going to do an MRI and figure out, what kind of defects it has. It's not shaykh. It's not realistic at all. So we are allowed to rely on the rov. Most cows are not treifas, so therefore... you're allowed to drink the milk from any particular cow that you milk. You can assume that that cow is not a treif. Okay? Because most cows in the world are not treifas. That's what we call ruba de lesa kamon.
If you have your own cow,
you also don't have to do an MRI. You can assume that since most cows in the world are not treifas, presumably this cow is also not a treif.
You drink all your milk from the one cow.
Yeah, fine. Now, if you do something which makes it likely that it is a treifa, for example, it came out that for some time they were giving injections to the cows that oftentimes they inject straight into the lungs. That would cause a puncture in the lung. So, okay, so then you have a problem. Okay, so that's the pshat that you're allowed to assume. You milk a cow, that the milk that's coming out of it is okay. Because now, once you shecht it is possible to check for the different treifas. So some of the treifas, many of the treifas, we don't bother checking for because it's very unusual that a cow is a treifa. If it looks healthy, okay, if you see that it's not healthy in some way, so then maybe there's more room to be chashish. But it's a cow that generally seems healthy, so chance it's a mi'ut she'eino matsui, that it's a treifa, we don't bother checking. However, some treifas are miyutam matzui, and therefore we do have to check for them. So the most common one is the lungs, what's called a sircha bereya, an adhesion on the lung. So when they shecht an animal, they always have to check the lungs to make sure that there's no puncture on the lungs. How do they do this? You guys probably saw this when they did the shechita here in the yeshiva.
This goes for all animals, or just like certain animals?
For all animals, they have to check the lungs.
No, I'm saying, like, is it more common in more animals than it is others?
Okay, the different stats. The different stats for different, not only for different animals, but also for different ages of the animals and for different locations, depending on the, what's that?
The lungs is the most prominent.
Lung is the most prominent of the trachus. Okay, so you have to check the lungs. Now, if the lung is totally smooth, that's what we call glat, halak. Then you're in good shape. That's very good. Now, sometimes the lungs are not smooth. They have adhesions. And then we have to figure out, now what? Because sometimes under the thingy on the lung, there might be a hole in the lung. And that would be a trepha. And sometimes not. Sometimes it's just a little thingy stuck on the lung. So, as follows. Here's it. Now, there's chumras of Sfarim, chumras of Ashkenazim, and Bismanenu, because of the industrial nature of the contemporary kosher meat industry, so basically we've adopted the chumras of everybody. So, because that's how you can market it to the widest possible people, you know, market.
In America, more than.
So, especially in America. Now, what basically happens like this: if you have two adjacent, there's different lobes of the lung, okay? If you have two adjacent lobes that are stuck together, according to the Mechaber, it's totally fine. Sfardim would say, you know, I have nothing to worry about. The Ramo would say, you need to check. You need to do an examination to check if there's a puncture of the lung. If there are two non-adjacent lobes that are stuck together, then the Mechaber would say, forget about it, it's treif. The Ramo would say, it would be better if you are machmer. However, you're allowed to check. You're allowed to do an examination. Okay, basically, according to the Mechaber and Sfardim, you never do an examination. Either it's smooth, at least there's no... There's no non-adjacent lobes that are stuck together, or it's strafe. According to the Ramah, it's better if it's totally smooth and there's no shadows. But if it's not totally smooth, and even if there are two non-adjacent lobes that are stuck together, you can always do the examination. What you do is you remove whatever is not smooth on it, and then you blow it up and you submerge it in water and see if there's any air bubbles, and you try to see if there's a hole in the lung. Okay? Now, if you do that examination, and it comes out that it's fine, so then it's kosher. It's not glot, but it is kosher. Okay, so that's the difference between glot and non-glot. Now, this distinction only exists with regard to, basically with regard to beef. Okay, when it comes to chickens, there's no such thing as examining adhesions on the lungs. It doesn't exist. Either it's glot or it's straight. Okay, so the word glot has been co-opted to mean lots of things. To mean like, really kosher.
Yeah, like
you know, so you could have like a glot kosher pizza store, right? It doesn't mean anything, really.
No.
Okay, it just means like this is like seriously kosher, as far as I'm concerned. You know,
there's no good English word.
It means really buy from me. That's what it basically means. Okay.
There's no good English word for
Mahatma. Okay. Okay. So in any event, for Ashkenaz. No, they don't check the cows from where they make cheese from. Okay, Mi'ikar Adin for Ashkenazim, non-glot meat is kosher as long as it's been checked. Practically speaking, in America, you can't get kosher non-glot meat. Why? It's not worth their while, as I said, as we mentioned last time. They have these industrial, production lines of meat production down in South America. It's not worth their while to take the time to check lungs that are not glot. What they simply do is they pick it up and put it on the non-kosher line. Okay, that takes 10 seconds. As opposed to checking it, it's going to take you, I don't know how long exactly.
20 seconds.
It's just, not 20 seconds, a little longer. I don't know, whatever, a few minutes.
If it's more than 10 seconds, it's not worth their while.
It's not worth their while from a financial perspective to check. So they're just, they're checking thousands of animals a day. So what's the difference? Just to take the next one. So in America, the only meat that exists is that's kosher, is glot. In Israel, that's not the case. In Israel, you can get the non-glot, you can get kosher non-glot meat. Okay?
You so, Knock,
yeah. Is
yeah. Oh, in Israel.
In Israel. Yeah. In Israel. Okay. So then, now there is a question. Let's say you have an American person who comes to Israel. Do we assume that since, look, you know, glad, even for Ashkenazim, glad is a chumrah, is a good chumrah. So do we assume that it has the din of minog, that you're makpid on glad because you only grew up eating glad, and now you have to be makpid on glad in Israel? Or do we assume that no, you don't have a minog to be makpid on glad, you just couldn't get non glad, it wasn't even available.
Americans that come here have no idea about the kashrus here.
Okay, that's a separate issue. But there are those who are educated and who know what we're talking about. Okay? So that is a discussion. There are Rabbanim on both sides of the equation. If I'm not mistaken, Rav Lichtenstein was of the opinion that it doesn't necessarily count as a minog. It might be a nice chumrah anyway, but it doesn't necessarily count as a minog that you're mechuyev to only eat glat just because you came from America. Okay. So this is basically a little primer on just in terms of the terminology here, what it means in order to be glat. As we said, glat, whatever is marketed bismanenu is glat. It means it takes the chumras of all sides. So they don't allow checking the lungs when there's an adhesion because, according to the Mechaber, that's no good. On the other hand, if they have adjacent lobes that are stuck together, so according to the Mechaber, you don't even need to check.
Why?
So that he holds it's not likely that covers a puncture. According to the Rambam, you do need to check. So they're not going to allow those adhesions because it's no good according to the Rambam. As I said, they're going to be taking all the chumras. Yeah.
Wait. So if there's an adhesion in the lungs, it can be okay still, or if it's like a puncture, how does it work?
So again, if there's a puncture, if there's a hole in the lung, it's trafe. Okay, trafe. Now, if there's like some sort of if there's lobes of the lungs that are stuck together, or if there's a scab-like substance on the lung, then we are concerned that there may be a puncture. And according to the Mechaber, it's trafe. And according to the Rama, you have to simply examine and check to make sure that there's no puncture.
Why doesn't the first guy just say check and then?
The Mechaber holds apparently that the checks are not necessarily reliable enough to be.
Also, what's so great about punctured? Like, why punctured lung?
Because God.
The list of the 18 shayfas are halacha l'moshe misina.
So no, there's no like.
The Gemara says that there's an assumption he'll die within a year, but doesn't matter. And that's not the main thing. Is it's halacha l'moshe misina.
What's so bad about having a
Their Rabbanu Shalom said that you can't eat it as a treifa. Discrimination. The Pasuk in Chumash says he's not allowed to eat a treifa. So this is the definition of a treifa. Maybe you say it's discrimination against pigs. That pigs are treifa.
It is.
Okay, as I mentioned.
Imagine if you were a pig.
As I mentioned.
I won't eat you.
As I mentioned, the term treif, by the way, also comes from treifa. It's actually in halacha, it refers to a very specific thing. But of course, the term has been also used much more broadly to refer to anything that's not kosher. Okay, we'll pause here. Yashar Koyach.
Can you tell me?